podcast for the mystically curious and epically magical. Through conversations on tarot, spirituality, and mysticism, my goal with this podcast is to create a friendly, accessible space to think critically and openly about the unknown and the unknowable. It is my belief that truth comes to us in the form of questions rather than answers. So let's enjoy the journey together. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to In Search of Tarot. My name is Nick, and I'm a queer, non-binary tarot reader, teacher, and writer, and I'll be your host. I'm so happy to be back with you. I love doing this podcast and I'm thrilled to join you for another amazing week. Thank you for being here. I'm not going to spend too much time today preambling on this episode because I'm so excited to share this interview with you. I'm sure that many, if not all of you, have already seen the images of the incredible Somnia Tarot floating around Instagram and the interwebs. This deck's haunting images of shrouded figures and submerged spirits brings the tarot to life like never before. The creator of the Somnia Tarot, photographer Nicholas Bruno, who joins me today, has suffered from sleep paralysis for the entirety of his life, and he uses photography to recreate his nocturnal visions for all the world to see. If you are familiar with this deck, you will know that many of the images are staged in seemingly dangerous and precarious ways. Nicholas performs all his own stunts, playing protagonist and antagonist, and literally is living his dreams out in front of the camera. As you'll hear in this interview, when he and I began discussing the actual lived experience of hanging oneself upside down to create the image of the hanged man, I was incredibly struck by the depth of knowledge that comes from actually living the tarot versus simply studying, memorizing, and intellectualizing it. Of course, I'm not suggesting we all go out and photograph ourselves enacting every scenario the tarot presents us with, but it did make me think about the ways in which I could bring tarot into more of my own lived experience. You know, for me, one of the biggest turning points as a reader was when I began thinking of the tarot in day-to-day life. An interaction at a coffee shop, an argument I got into at work, a beautiful night with my fiance. The more these real-life scenarios began reminding me in the exact moment they were happening of certain tarot cards, the more these cards would sing and burst to life for me when I was doing readings. And the more I could share these real-life experiences with my clients, the more clearly and deeply they would relate and understand what the cards were trying to tell them. I would love to hear about any of your experiences with living the tarot. Please always feel free to either DM me on Instagram at manofthecards or email me at manofthecards@gmail.com. I also want to say a quick thank you to those of you who have left ratings and reviews of this podcast on Apple iTunes. Some of you wrote asking if you could do the same thing on Spotify, and surprisingly, it actually does appear that Spotify doesn't have that capability, but I really, really appreciate your support. I appreciate you reaching out and trying to make it happen, and you always can feel free to share this podcast on social media, send it along to anyone you think that would like it. I'm always trying to get it to reach more people because we have some pretty amazing guests on here and I would love for as many people to hear it as can. And I want to give a huge thank you to everyone who has joined me on my newly launched Patreon. I've been really blown away by all the support there and I thank you so, so much. It's been so fun to connect with you and we've had a lot of great conversations going and I just appreciate your support. If you're interested in joining these wonderful people and supporting this podcast and the work that I do, you can do so for as little as $2 a month over on patreon.com/manofthecards. And I'll also drop the link in the show notes for that and in my Instagram bio. And finally, before we jump into today's interview with Nicholas, I have some huge news, some truly huge news to share. Yesterday, early bird registration kicked off for the summer 2021 semester of the Searcher Symposium, which will feature the return of my 6-week virtual tarot study groups, both a beginner intermediate and an intermediate and advanced level with some new features. I've extended the hours on those groups this time around, and I've also added a one-time quote unquote office hours check-in with me. That'll just be one-on-one and scheduled around your schedule and your availability, just to make sure that you're getting the most out of your group. I made these changes based on feedback I got last time around. And I also wanted to ensure that anyone that wanted to come back for study group, that it would be a new experience. So I've left the syllabus a little bit more open so that we can really cater to what the group is wanting to talk about, and just to keep the journey kind of going for everyone. And the most exciting thing I have to announce is that this year, this summer, I will be hosting the first ever Searcher Solstice Tarot Conference. The conference will take place on the weekend of the summer solstice, June 18th through the 20th, and it will feature workshops, rituals, and a panel discussion with some of today's most celebrated teachers and artists. And get a load of this list of the people that are coming. Our guest teachers include Charlie Claire Burgess, who is the creator of Fifth Spirit Tarot, Sarah Hanks of Cottonwood Tarot, Mallory Hasty of Witch Church Podcast, Maria Menes, author of the Anti-Racism in the Tarot blog series, Rebecca Skolnick, numerologist and host of Discourse of the Stranger podcast, Cassandra Snow, author of Queering the Tarot and Queering Your Craft, and Zanetta Sykes, sound ritualist and host of the Art Witch podcast. And many of those folks have appeared. In fact, I think all will, by the time we get to the actual event, all will have appeared on this podcast. I'm going to have an interview coming up in a week or two with Cassandra Snow that I'm excited about as well. So I'm sure you're familiar with these people, but they are all, each of them, incredible, and I'm so honored to have them join us. There will be 6 hours of magic unfurling over the course of 3 days, and I think it goes without saying that this weekend is going to be absolutely unforgettable. If you're interested in learning more and registering for the Searcher Solstice Tarot Conference and or the virtual tarot study groups, I will include the link in the show notes. As I said, it's now registration is now open, and there's an early bird discount when you register before May 17th that will give you 10% off automatically when you check out. And that will apply to all of the different tiers of payment, including payment plans. Everything is 10% off when you register by May 17th. So don't wait. Join us. The tarot study groups are limited to only 8 participants, and they're already starting to get slotted in. So I hope you can join us this summer. All right, now on to my guest for today. Nicholas Bruno is an artist based in Northport, New York, where he photographs and fabricates props for his compositions. Bruno weaves together his terrifying experiences of sleep paralysis with surreal self-portraiture in a therapeutic translation of night terror to image. His constructed worlds of uncertainty exist on a plane between waking and sleeping, where he is tormented by a physical embrace of the subconscious and its perils, all while being paralyzed in bed. Influences of 19th century romanticists, historical texts of occultism, and dream symbolism lace each composition with various visual dialogues of the macabre. I'm sure many of you have seen and perhaps already pre-ordered Nicholas's newest creation, the Somnia Tarot, which weaves together the world of his nocturnal visitations with the history of magic of the tarot. I had the most wonderful time talking with Nicholas about his artistic process, and he was so generous and vulnerable in sharing his really truly harrowing experiences of sleep paralysis. But it's so inspiring the way that he now uses his art to express all of this with the world and to give people around the world who also suffer from sleep paralysis something to, you know, show and speak on their behalf. I think a lot of people, Nicholas was telling me, a lot of people who suffer from sleep paralysis are met with doubt and even fear by the people that they share it with. A lot of times some really tragic misunderstanding and some forced, things like exorcism and all kinds of different things can occur when we don't understand, you know, what someone's going through. And so Nicholas is trying to give us a visual to make us understand what people with sleep paralysis are experiencing. So I hope you enjoy this conversation. I thank Nicholas for joining me, and I will talk to you next week.
remember my first interaction with tarot cards was when I was around maybe like 5 or 6 years old. I spent a lot of time at my grandma's house, and she set up her whole basement for me to like go down there, hang out. And she had all these really cool antique trains and Legos and stuff for me to play with. So I'd be down there for a pretty long time. And she also had a storage room, and I would always go in there and look at all the cool antique things that she had, whether it be from my great grandmother or my great grandfather. And one day I was down there and I found a tin, and I opened it, and it was a bunch of cards. And little did I know, this was my great grandmother's tarot deck. And I was taking them out and looking at them. And then my grandmother came down. She's like, no, don't touch those. And she took them from me and she hid them up on the shelf. And of course, me being a curious kid, whenever she would go back upstairs, I would climb up and grab them and look at them again.
Yeah.
So that was my first interaction with the cards themselves. And that memory always kind of stuck with me. And then throughout high school, I had friends who read tarot, and I had a lot of people show me the images because they saw my artwork and they were like, oh, maybe you would get inspiration from this. So I had always looked at the Rider-Waite deck. That was mostly the deck that I was looking at for inspiration when people would send them to me.
Mm-hmm.
I had one reading done when I was little, and then college happened. I was creating my sleep paralysis photo series, and a lot more people started sending me the tarot images. Like, you should start creating, maybe even like take one of the cards and redo it in your own style. So that was always on the back burner of my mind as well.
Mm. Do you think your grandmother read tarot? Do you know?
She did. Mm. And the unfortunate part is we can't find the cards. My grandmother moved from her old house to a house that's actually near where I live now.
Mm-hmm.
And during that moving process, a lot of things were shifted. Some things went to my uncle's house, and we're still actively looking for the cards themselves. Mm. They were in a box with an old camera too. And my grandma's really upset about the fact that we can't find them, but I'm hoping that, like, hopefully this year sometime when we go through her attic, we could possibly find them. And then it just adds more to the whole story of what I've been creating.
Yeah, totally. And you mentioned sleep paralysis, and, you know, a lot of your photographic work has been inspired by that, and also your dream journals. So will you talk a bit about that?
Sure. Yeah. So as a kid, and until now, I've been experiencing sleep paralysis for pretty much any time I go to bed, if I don't remedy the way that I sleep. It only happened it was less frequent when I was a younger kid, but once I got to high school, around like 14, 15 years old, it started happening every single night.
Wow.
And when I would go to bed, I would wake up in a state of paralysis. Basically what happens in sleep paralysis is you'll wake up and your body is still asleep, but you're conscious. So you're basically dreaming while you're awake. And what happens is you start to get anxiety because you can't move. And that interacts with the chemical that triggers your dreams while you're sleeping. So you basically dream while you're awake. And gosh, I'll see these characters above my bed. I'll see like these strange anomalies going on around my room. I'll start feeling like I'm drowning. And these characters will just torment you until you wake up.
Mm.
And I really didn't know what was going on. I thought I was possessed. I thought maybe my house was haunted. In the fact of growing up as, I grew up in a Greek Orthodox household, and there was a lot of superstitions from my great grandmother that were passed on to me.
Mm.
So I always thought that it was something demonic or spiritual that was maybe attacking me or was living within my house. And it wasn't until I started creating this artwork and researching everything I could about what was going on with me, I finally landed on that Wikipedia page for sleep paralysis. And I learned that it was a medical condition that could be remedied. And I finally had an answer for what was happening to me.
Wow. So is it never pleasant? Is it always kind of a frightening experience?
For the years that I didn't know what was going on, it was always terrifying. I mean, it still is terrifying, but I'm a lot more aware of what's happening when I do wake up in an episode. Mm-hmm. And I almost like, I try to poke fun at some of the characters that I run into during the dreams.
Mm-hmm.
I also try to rationalize as much as I can, because I call this the fear cycle. And when you wake up, if you feed the experience fear, it lasts longer and it gets worse.
Mm-hmm.
But if you can break that fear cycle through rationality, through humor, through any other methods, It almost gives the experience less power, and you're able to exit the experience and not have as much trauma or turmoil happening.
Yeah, that's amazing. I mean, when you explain it that way, I would imagine it's had an effect on the way you live your waking life.
It absolutely does. I mean, I used to be a very, well, I still am an introvert, type B, not very outgoing person. Especially while this was all happening, I pretty much became a recluse because I didn't want to talk to anybody. I didn't know how to talk about it. Mm-hmm. And I felt like I was maybe, people would think I was crazy or insane. People told me that I'm just having bad nightmares and just brush it off. But it's sleep paralysis is something so much more than that. And it wasn't until I started making my artwork and expressing what I was going through that that basically became my voice and my therapy at the same time. And that just built up my confidence. And it really, my art gave me an outlet to talk about something that otherwise was impossible to share. And it really built up my self-confidence as well.
Yeah. So let's talk about that. When was the first time that you picked up a camera, and when did you start to use it in this way?
My first interactions with cameras, my mom used to buy me those little point and shoot. You can develop them at like pharmacies, like those little cameras that are like little tiny film cameras that mm-hmm. have maybe like 20 exposures on them. She would buy those for me, and I was fascinated by them. And I would go out and I'd shoot pictures around my backyard or of my Lego setups or like action figure setups that I made. And that was like my favorite thing, because I'd give her the camera, she would develop them for me and then bring me these pictures. And I was just fascinated with the fact that you could take an image and have it printed. And here you are, you have this tangible object that you can share with the world. And that was like my first fascination with photography. And throughout high school, when I started taking my photography class, which was like my outlet in the world, I started shooting with her digital camera. I ended up winning my first camera through a high school photography competition. And that basically changed my life by having my own camera. And that became the key to my self-expression. It was just me and that camera. I just started creating all these self-portraits and transforming all of my sleep paralysis experiences into artwork that I could share with the world.
Yeah. Do you ever miss those old days of the cameras that you don't know what it's going to look like before you get it back?
I do. And I do experiment with film just for my personal work. That has nothing really to do with my body's work that I'm creating in the fine art world. Mm-hmm. I love that process. And I love that experimentation. One thing that I got to do in college was shoot with large format film with the 4x5 cameras, where you put the sheet over your head and you're underneath there mm-hmm. and you're changing the bellows extension. And that process was really fun. And I think once I progress in my career, I would love to start shooting some of my pieces on 4x5 film. It's just a little expensive and hard to do when you don't have your own lab.
Yeah. When I listen to you talk about it, it sounds like almost this is a way, you know, photography is a way that you can prove to people, or like show people what it is that you're experiencing, like, you know, something that's happening that, like you said, a lot of people maybe don't even like believe or don't understand, but you can create these photographs to sort of show them this is it. This is what I'm going through.
Absolutely. I just consider photography a universal language. You can share a complex idea through a single photograph it just transcends all languages. You can show this to any person on the planet, and they may have an idea of what is going on. Maybe they have their own interpretation, but it's just a really powerful tool to express complex ideas.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So what is the process for you to go from maybe, you know, your dream journal into a fully realized photograph?
So what I'll do is, once I wake up from a sleep paralysis experience, I will grab whatever notebook I have, whether it be like a sketch pad on the side of my bed, or if I'm in a hotel, it's just like a napkin of sorts with my pen, and I'll just start sketching out pretty much anything that I felt during the dream, saw during the dream, anything that I was thinking about, or any symbols that appeared. And I'll jot that all down and I'll sketch it. And then that really rough sketch will end up informing a more refined sketch that I'll make in my studio. And that sketch allows me to figure out what props I'll need to build, what costumes I'll need to make, where I'm going to shoot it. And just, it gives me, it's almost like the blueprint for what my photograph is going to turn out to be. I rarely go out and just shoot something without planning it beforehand because I work by myself and there's a lot of moving components to each photograph that I make, such as figuring out where I'm going to stand and which costume I'll wear while my camera is shooting on my tripod. Because I need to plan out where my props will be and where my characters will be, because my camera shoots basically on an interval timer of every 3 seconds. And I'll be able to go out and model for multiple characters at a time because my camera is shooting. And once I have all those images, I can piece them together. And that allows me to become the protagonist, the antagonist. That allows me to paint the scene with a smoke bomb or maybe move an antique trunk a few times into different spots. So that way, when I layer it together, I have three antique trunks in the photograph. Mm-hmm. It just refines my process in a way where I can work by myself, become multiple characters, and have my hand in every part of the image.
Yeah. When I look at your images, they are so theatrical. Do you have a theatrical background at all?
I do not, but that aspect of the theatrics is kind of how I consider my work. It is basically a performance. Mm-hmm. I'm doing this dance, if you want to call it, in front of the camera where I'm changing my position. I'm swimming into this murky pond and I'm changing my costume. I'm lifting an antique heavy anvil over my head suspended from rope, and I'm sitting underneath this thing while my camera's shooting, and I'm hoping that doesn't fall on my head. So that's, especially within the tarot series, I got to basically become all of these characters in the tarot through my photography. It's like I almost lived in their shoes. For example, like if I was modeling for the Hanged Man, I'm hanging upside down for that photograph, and I felt what it was like to be the Hanged Man. So sometimes it can become an almost spiritual experience, becoming whether it be my sleep paralysis characters or the tarot characters. It just puts me in a different perspective.
Yeah, wow. That's there. Nothing like learning the tarot by actually hanging upside down as the Hanged Man.
Yes.
It's kind of almost like immersive theater. Are you a fan of immersive theater at all? Have you ever seen like Sleep No More? Or
I've been recommended Sleep No More multiple times. I still haven't had a chance to go. And I'm not sure if it's operating during the pandemic, but on the top of my list of something that I would like to do. And also something that I would like to even perform myself with maybe a theater company where we stitch together an idea that maybe revolves around sleep paralysis or the tarot series I've created that could be immersive. Definitely on top of my list.
Yes. Oh my gosh. I've actually seen Sleep No More 19 times. I have several friends that are in it, and it's not like anything else. It changed my life when I saw it. I actually went on to create two immersive shows of my own after seeing it. Wow. Because it just really spoke to me. I mean, it's such a visceral, you know, experience to be an audience member and have your heart pounding and running around. You know, you're living it. It's what you're talking about with the experience of being in these photographs. So I definitely think it would definitely be up your alley.
Sign me up.
Yeah. When you talk about the fact that you are, so many of these photographs are self-portraits, you know, on the one hand, I definitely can see how that would be cathartic and sort of therapeutic to live out, you know, these experiences in the photographs. But on the other hand, it almost feels like it would be kind of scary, or, you know, like, I mean, how do you feel, and what is it that makes you feel like it has to be you in those images?
So all of the characters that I see within my dreams, they're all part of me. They're directly coming from my subconscious. And I think for me, it's important to become those characters, even if they are terrifying, or go into these terrifying scenarios that I build for myself, because it is all a part of me and it's a part of the human experience. And through my photography, I go out and I perform and I put myself in these terrifying situations. But in those situations in front of my camera, I have complete control over what's going on, as opposed to during my sleep paralysis experiences where I'm completely frozen and I'm at the mercy of whatever happens. That just going out and reliving these experiences and having complete control, and then also having a tangible photograph that I can show the world at the end, it makes it all worth it. And it just allows me to relive something that's extremely negative and traumatic and just turn it into something completely positive.
Since you started doing it, has it changed anything about the experiences?
I definitely have more control within the dreams themselves, just because of the familiarity of things. Another part of that fear cycle that I was talking about another way to break it is through familiarity. And that's why I always recommend to keep a dream journal. That way you can document these characters that people see, whether they're the old hag, which is like this woman in a dress that generally floats above your bed and will shriek in your ear. If you take your journal and you document her, draw her, even if you're not good at sketching, just try it and just write down everything you can remember about this character. And the next time you run into them within your dream, you have that sense of familiarity. And I think for me, at least, fear is, it's fed by the unknown. And if you make the unknown known to yourself, you can break down those experiences and actually remove yourself from them when they happen in the dreams.
Yeah. So are you saying that these figures, because I definitely noticed patterns like in your images, and I was curious if there are patterns in the figures, or the figures kind of return the same again and again, but are you saying that they also appear to other people in the same way?
The most insane part about sleep paralysis is that these characters span across all cultures and all types of people around the world. Oh. Where throughout history, the old hag has been documented, the hatted man has been documented, the incubus has been documented, where it sits on your chest. And the fact that all humans are experiencing this across the board makes me wonder, is this just a uniquely human experience that these reoccurring characters have showed themselves throughout history? What about that in the subconscious has manifested like that? It's like my mission to uncover why. And by bringing awareness to sleep paralysis throughout the world with my art, I hope that we uncover something new about it, because it's so understudied and misunderstood that I want people to learn more, and I want the medical community to dive deeper into it so we can figure out what links us all together with these strange experiences.
Yeah, that's really fascinating. I did not know that. And also makes me again think why it's so appropriate to do a tarot project around this, because tarot works in archetype, you know, and archetypes also kind of appear across culture and time. So that's, wow, that's really amazing. You know, I think so many of us, myself included, had very strange sleep patterns, or had their sleep patterns change over the past, you know, year with the pandemic. There was one night in particular, I remember I woke up at 4 a.m. and lit a candle at my window and just watched the trees blow in the wind. And it, you know, it just was very haunting, and you could feel the world kind of shifting. Something, you know, is, I'll never forget that night. But has it changed for you, you know, and how has the pandemic kind of impacted your sleeping experience and also your work?
You know, it has been slightly different. I've had a lot more basic nightmares during the pandemic. Mm-hmm. A lot of them focusing a lot about the theme of uncertainty, where I'm finding myself maybe submerged deep into the ocean and I'm trying to swim up to the surface and I just can't make it. That's been a reoccurring theme during the pandemic for me. Mm. My characters have pretty much stayed the same that I've seen within the sleep paralysis experiences. Nobody really particularly different, but just my mindset when the pandemic started completely had to shift, because I'm a self-employed artist. I don't have a regular 9-to-5 job. And pretty much when the pandemic started, the whole art world stopped. All the galleries closed. Nobody's buying artwork. So I was a little freaked out. But thankfully, I learned a lot of skills, just self-coping skills and self-reliance skills. And I shifted my mindset. I pivoted and I said, okay, I need to focus on a project that will, one, give me a challenge, two, be rewarding in a self-fulfilling aspect, and three, will help me impact the world in a different way and keep people happy and excited for new artwork. So I dove headfirst into researching the tarot, exploring the archetypes behind it, the Jungian psychology behind it. And I spent a whole entire month just researching and sketching. And this process kept me in a high state of mind. I was so excited to just really dive in and learn. And before I knew it, I sketched out all 78 interpretations of all the tarot cards from the Rider-Waite deck in my own style. And this basis just gave me a schedule. Like, I'm going to start shooting late March, and hopefully I'm going to end before the year ends. and this will get me through the pandemic and whatever the world has in store for us.
Wow. That honestly, that's a pretty fast timeline.
Yeah, I wasn't expecting to finish. It was, to be honest, but the world stopped. So like, it's just me and my camera. And I've had this relationship where I go out and create these self-portraits for such a long time that it was almost just like second nature. And I finally, even though it was a really horrific time, it was almost a blessing for me to be able to go out into the preserves where nobody's out there, or I'm on the beach and nobody's there. And I basically had the world to myself and my camera, and I just started creating throughout these months. And it kept me so occupied that before I knew it, I finished the project and the world started to shift towards some sort of normalcy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Wow. So, you know, you touched on this a little bit, but speak a little bit more about how you did approach coming up with these images and the meanings behind the cards. I'm curious, you know, if you consulted with anyone else or, you know, because some of the cards, some of the images definitely, you know, evoke the Rider-Waite-Smith imagery, but some I feel like also are quite different. And I'm going to bring some of those up a little later, but, you know, how did you go about kind of coming to your version of what it should look like?
So I spoke with a lot of my friends who are witches and mm-hmm. ones that read tarot as well. And I pitched them the idea of what I was going to do. And they recommended a lot of different types of books to me. And I dove in and I explored the history, the archetypes, the psychology, all for an entire month. And just this process of keeping my own journal and learning more about the cards, interacting with them, seeing how they're used and what they looked like in antiquity, that all helped me inform what I was going to create, because I didn't want to just make a reproduction of the cards that already exist. I feel like that's been happening for a very long time. Mm-hmm. But what I wanted to do was create something that is respectful of tradition, is accurate in every way that I can, created only through photography, and something that allows me to take my dream journal experiences and my sleep paralysis experiences and allow those to tell the story of the tarot.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Have you been able to observe anyone read with the deck yet, or have you read with it?
Not yet. So the project itself, it was fully funded last month, and I am currently waiting on the pre-production sample from the press.
Okay.
And once I have that and I approve it, they're going to start making all the decks that have been ordered already, and then they're going to go out into the world. And I'm so excited for people to use them as a tool. And I can't wait to see what people do with them and how they react to them as well.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm sure that, do you ever hear from people, other people that experience sleep paralysis and have seen your work? Do they ever, you know, contact you and say, thank you for, you know, validating me and showing this to the world or anything like that?
That was really the number one thing that gave me self-confidence, because once I started putting my work out there online, I had an inpouring of messages from people all around the world, different languages, saying, thank you for doing this. I can now talk to my parents about what I'm going through, especially younger kids reach out to me mm-hmm. about this, because they don't know how to talk to their parents about it, nor did I. And mm-hmm. in a lot of cultures, religious doctrine kind of takes over what's going on. And these kids will go through even more traumatic experiences through exorcism, through religious ceremony, trying to remove this so-called demon from their body. But meanwhile, they could just as easily fix their experience through like an oral appliance or a CPAP machine that helps them breathe, because the number one cause of sleep paralysis is sleep apnea and also narcolepsy. So these two medical conditions, they can be remedied through some adjustments to the way you sleep. And I feel bad for all these kids who go through even more traumatic experiences and end up being depressed or even commit suicide over how many times they experience these horrible dreams.
Yeah, gosh. A lot of the images in your deck contain what looks like pretty dangerous, you know, elements to compose. And I was curious even if any of it was digitally added afterwards, but it sounds like not. You know, there's fire and water, and you know, so how do you handle that? I mean, and one image in particular that struck me was the Two of Coins, where you're on top of that really precarious stack of chairs.
Yes.
And it made me wonder if you have a circus background, which we already talked about. You know, you don't have a theater background or anything. So what, you know, do you, are there people you work with to make sure that's done safely, or, you know, how do you do that?
So I do all my own stunts whenever I'm doing a photograph. Anything, my philosophy is that everything has to happen in front of the camera. Because I'm creating in a very surreal sort of genre of work. And a lot of that surreal work is done in Photoshop. And the way that I change the way that I create is I build all my props, costumes, and I'm out there, whether it be in the middle of February, in the middle of a pond, or if I'm standing on that stack of chairs, I find a way to engineer it where it's done safely. Well, to the most part, I'd like to take that risk. I mean, I love doing stunts for stuff outside of this, a hobby of mine. I do a lot of medieval, like sword play and sparring and martial arts stuff too. Mm. So I'm accustomed to that. And I like to put myself in these uncomfortable situations because it just helps me build more self-confidence and physical strength. And it's just a part of me as a person. I like to go through these complex situations because they're more believable within my photographs and allows me to have a better understanding of my environment and what goes on around me.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. When you were talking about, you know, people writing you in that have sleep paralysis and saying, thank you. I also wanted to say thank you. You know, so I identify as non-binary. And one of the things that I really appreciate about this deck that you've made is that it is fairly gender neutral. You know, so many of the figures are hooded, and that's interesting too. You know, I also, when I was looking at your other work, it looks like the hooded figure is kind of another returning idea, and perhaps that's one of the figures that comes to you in these experiences. But you know, I would love to talk a little bit about your interpretation of the Emperor and the Empress in particular, because those are two cards that are traditionally, you know, very gendered. But also your images, I think, are very different from Rider-Waite-Smith. What I love about your Empress is, I like that they are creating something, you know, it looks like they're sewing, or, you know, from what I have seen.
Correct.
And so I really like that idea. I like that it's not, you know, the traditional pregnant woman necessarily. And then in the Emperor, the anvil is over their head. Is that right?
Correct.
Yeah. And that's so provocative as well. So will you talk about those two images?
So with the Empress, I wanted to explore the idea of a maternal figure and also incorporate one of my great grandmother's objects within this piece, which I used her antique sewing machine that she left to my grandma. After all, my great grandmother was kind of the inspiration to start this project. So I wanted to have a piece of her in there. And she, to me, is like the Empress archetypal figure to me. All of her teachings were passed down to me. She's that maternal figure. So I wanted to have my Empress creating. She's sewing. There's this beautiful red piece of linen cloth that she's sewing, and it's now dipping down over the edge of the sewing machine and entering this pool of water that's before her. And that is like her giving life to the nature around her. And we have the candle on her side, which is that little flicker of inspiration that she can give you. And I wanted to have that really cool feminine energy in there with her white dress. So for the Empress, I did mask the character's face with their hair. I know that this is a generally feminine gendered card, and I did want to harken back to my great grandmother, but I also wanted to allow my dream journals to tell the story of the tarot here. So I did include this character. She almost resembles the way that I see the old hag within my dreams, where she's generally faceless and she has this white dress and she's levitating above my bed or at my bedside. And I wanted to feature her as the archetypal Empress here, because that's really the only female character I've ever seen within my sleep paralysis experiences.
Interesting. And then what about the Emperor?
For the Emperor within the image, I have this gray cloaked figure where he's sitting in this throne, and above him is this 80-pound anvil that's hanging above his head that's connected to a rope. And that rope is wrapped around the wooden structure to his right, and he's holding that rope with his hand. And I wanted to symbolize the aspect of the weight of responsibility hanging above this emperor's head, because he's the ruler of his kingdom and everything relies on him. So he's hanging all of his responsibilities above his head. And should he relinquish his responsibility, everything would come crashing down. And in his left arm, he's holding a book with gilded edges. And that's his knowledge that he holds at his side when he's advising all the people that come to him for advice.
Mm. And is this based on a figure that comes to you?
And this is the figure that I portrayed within The Emperor is one of the classic shadow male figures that I see within my sleep paralysis experiences. They generally have no face, and their body sometimes is humanoid, but also can just be almost like drapery or a cloud of like an apparition of sorts, almost like a ghost, but not really, more of like a specter looking character. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to include that male character that I always experience within my sleep paralysis experiences through The Emperor.
Mm. And, you know, as I was looking through the images, there's humor too. I was curious in particular about the Five of Wands. It kind of makes me laugh a little bit, like in a good way. What are your thoughts on that?
I'm going to pull that up quickly just so I can talk about it.
Okay. I think it's the combination of like what that card means for me, which oftentimes is about kind of showing off or a little bit of the ego that can creep in as you are an artist, like comparing yourself to other people. And so I appreciated that they were being sort of snuffed out, you know?
Yeah. So for the Five of Wands, I have a male character who's holding a candelabra with five candles there, presenting it outward. And on the other side, we have a female character with like fireplace bellows, and she's snuffing out and extinguishing the tops of these candles here. And as an artist, you're offering your hard work, your heart and soul to the world to be judged by everybody else. Mm. And there's always going to be that one person, for example, on your Instagram that will comment that one rude thing or mm-hmm. some unwanted criticism. And that could really start to extinguish your flame. But being vulnerable as an artist is just part of the game, and you have to put yourself out there. And there will always be that person who's trying to extinguish you. But if you stay and keep creating and keep your momentum, you're going to traverse all those naysayers and create something completely beautiful.
Mm, that's so good. Are you going to include a guidebook at all with the deck?
So the deck comes with a little white book that has some basic interpretations of each card. And what I'm planning on doing is creating a hardcover photography book that does include more in-depth explanations and also a guidebook as well.
Okay. Yeah. Cause what you just said is incredible and gave me so many new thoughts about that card. So I love it. You know, one of the funniest things to me when I read tarot for other people, when I have clients that have never worked with tarot or aren't really from sort of the magical community, they always say, I'm afraid you're going to pull the death card. Everyone is, you know, very afraid of death, which totally makes sense. But you know, I actually couldn't find your death card when I was looking, and I may have just missed it, but maybe you can talk a bit about that. And also I'm wondering if for you, if that is the quote unquote scary card, or if there's another card for you and your, and how it relates to your own experiences with sleep paralysis that makes it actually a scarier card for you.
I actually am in love with the death card. Just the aspect of death being a messenger and not a murderer. He's coming to share a new beginning with you and guide you, whether it be into the afterlife or into a new experience, or put death to an old habit and bring you into something completely new and wholesome. Mm-hmm. For my character, I have myself on top of this horse, and the character and the horse are both shrouded in this wet cloth that I created out of four top sheets that are stitched together. And the character is holding the classic black flag with the Rose of York featured on it as well. I painted that onto a big piece of wool cloth. And the character is in the middle of this gigantic foggy ocean where the horizon line disappears behind them. And it's an almost serene experience where you're confronted with this cloaked rider who's now he's going to eventually lock eyes with you and bring you into the afterlife or into a new experience. I just really enjoyed creating this piece because it was a peaceful sort of photo shoot in itself, where I'm in the middle of this foggy ocean on top of a horse and the waves are gently lapping against the side of the horse. And it was just a really serene experience.
Yeah. How did the horse feel about that?
So I am a huge advocate for animal rights, and I do not want to use real horses within my series, because the plan was to have these horses be shrouded and covered in fabric, and I knew that would be uncomfortable for an animal. So what I ended up doing was I found a company on Long Island that creates gigantic fiberglass horses. And I ended up getting one of these horses and transporting it all over Long Island for my photographs. And I was carrying it down the shoreline a mile. I was carrying it through the woods.
Gosh.
It was really heavy, but it was definitely worth it. And it allowed me to work on my own terms and not put any animals in danger, because I've seen like countless movies from years ago where horses were used and they were hurt and badly injured. And I don't want that to be a part of my experience as a photographer and an artist. And I don't want to encourage that for other people too, because working with animals is such a delicate thing.
Yeah. Yes. We all appreciate that. That's the choice you made.
Yeah.
So is there another card that maybe for you is a little bit more challenging?
A challenging one definitely would be the Hanged Man. I knew I wanted to hang myself upside down for this shoot, and it could be dangerous just being stuck upside down like that, because if I stayed up like that too long, I could pass out and maybe even get really seriously injured if the wooden structure I built tipped over.
Mm-hmm.
So what I did was I built the structure and I experimented with it outside my studio before I even brought it out into the field. I had to figure out a way to flip myself upside down and hook myself onto the wooden structure and hang there to allow myself to get a really cool photograph. So what I ended up doing was tying the rope around my ankle first with a loop at the bottom, and I attached a hook to the wooden structure. And I looked up inversion yoga. There's like a method you can use where people grab fabric and they flip themselves upside down. And I basically did that, but with rope, and it allowed me to flip upside down, hook my foot on there, and hang upside down while my camera was shooting.
What's so cool about that, like you said, you know, living these cards out, I mean, you just described what it is to be in the Hanged One. Like that, you know, when I speak to clients about it, I literally talk about inversion and yoga. And, you know, we talk about choosing to hang yourself upside down, but to hear someone talk about how hard that is, you know, that it's like complicated and you have to figure it out and maybe even have to practice, and also that you can't stay there too long. You know, I mean, that is so valuable to bring to an interpretation of that card.
Absolutely. And just going back off of like the difficulty of creating that, once I was inverted, it was a very serene, surreal experience to be upside down and looking at the world in a new way. Mm-hmm. And you know that the inverse option of the Hangman is the character who's doing a jig. He's dancing and there's the sun behind him, and you're looking on the brighter side of life after you've done your ordeal. So I got to experience the upright and the reverse aspect of the card too.
I love that so much.
It was crazy. It was really crazy.
Yeah. I also, again, may have missed it, but I was looking for the moon, because I think if I had to pick a card to sort of embody your experience overall, like, you know, of your life and your sleep paralysis and everything, I probably would choose the moon. So what's the moon image for you?
So I went back to one of my earlier photographs and sketches for this piece, because the moon revolves around nightmares, dreams, uncertainty, the unknown. I wanted to harken back to some of my earlier sleep paralysis entries in my journal.
Mm-hmm.
And in this image, I have myself in the middle of this murky marshland, and I'm halfway submerged in the water. And the character is climbing up this ladder, and you're slowly going to run out of ladder length because the ladder keeps sinking into the water as you climb it. And then you'll eventually go back underneath the water. And in my work, I use water to symbolize the subconscious. And anybody that's above the water is in the conscious world. Mm-hmm. And my characters are often halfway submerged between the two, because I'm stuck in sleep paralysis, which is the balance between conscious and subconscious.
Mm-hmm.
So when the ladder runs out for this character, he goes back into the world of sleep, and eventually he'll wake up again. I shot this image at like 2 a.m. in the marshland, where the moon had just peaked out and the water was rippling beautifully, and I'm out in the water posing while I'm doing a long exposure. We have the water rippling in front of me, and the grasses are on the right side of the image, and it almost creates like a voyeurism effect within the work, as if you were an onlooker looking through the brush at this character who's climbing the ladder within the water.
It's stunning. So do you have any new, I mean, I know you're still kind of wrapping this one up and probably needing a break, but do you have any new projects that you're working on?
So right now it's not photography related, but we are filming a new video documentary on my process, my story, and how I create my work. I did create a new image for this video doc that's coming out, and it does harken back to the Hanged Man image. It's almost a reinterpretation of that in a different way. So I think people are going to be pretty excited about that. Both my sleep paralysis fans and my tarot fans will really enjoy this upcoming doc.
Yeah. Is that going to be released on a platform, or are you sending it out to like festivals, or what's going to happen with
it? So we're doing a premiere at Sands Point Castle. Sands Point Preserve has this really cool castle on the property. And we ended up shooting a lot of the doc inside this castle, where we created a fake bedroom in the middle of this old library. And I'm featured sketching on the side of the bed. And a lot of my characters are walking around this castle with like candles and such. And it kind of tells the story of like being within the realm of the subconscious. And maybe that's where these characters actually live, in this old antique castle with candelabras and chandeliers. So we're going to actually premiere that video doc within the castle, and then also release it everywhere online, whether it be my social media, YouTube, and hopefully sending it to film festivals.
Oh man, I know you don't know me, but you are speaking straight to my soul. Like I love it all. I'm obsessed with it. So to close out, I would love to just let you tell people, you know, where they can find you and your work, and where they can purchase the Somnia Tarot.
Sure. Yeah. So you can find me on Instagram. That's where I'm most active. And that's Nicolas Bruno, which is NicolasBruno. I don't have an H in my first name. You can go on my website, which is NicolasBrunoPhotography.com. I'm on Facebook as well. You can find me there if you search my name. And if you'd like to order the deck, and I, along with other products such as the spread cloth that I've created, and there's going to be an upcoming pendulum that I'm designing as well. That's all on somniatarot.com.
Oh, so cool. All right, Nicolas, thank you so, so, so much for spending some time with me today. And you've given me a lot to think and dream about.
That's awesome. Thank you so much for having me and giving me a platform to talk about this.
Thanks for listening to In Search of Tarot. If you feel called, please share this podcast with someone you think will enjoy it. You can also support this offering by hitting subscribe and leaving a rating and review on Apple Podcasts. Whatever you do, breathe deeply and be well.